Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
The world is facing a shortage of tradespeople. The metaverse can help solve that problem. With a virtual reality training platform developed by ForgeFX, aspiring welders can practice over and over. As a result, students learn the specialized skills they need to begin and advance welding careers. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
Leute, es wird unangenehm, denn ich muss euch einfach fragen, habt ihr euch eigentlich schon mal um eure Versicherung gekümmert? Hier ist übrigens Tara vom Podcast Tara sagt was und ich sage euch, es wird allerhöchste Zeit, Ordnung in euer Versicherungschaos zu bringen und dabei kann euch die App Clark helfen. Da arbeiten ganz viele Expertinnen, die das hauptberuflich machen, man glaubt es kaum. Und mit meinem Code TARA60, alles groß und zusammengeschrieben, könnt ihr euch sogar einen Shopping-Gutschein sichern, 60 Euro, bei zum Beispiel Amazon oder Douglas einlösbar, mit dem Code TARA60.
The Global Jigsaw is the podcast lifting the language barrier to show you the world through its media.
Радіо Тегерану.
Ми не вторгались на територію України.
Western countries are not the international community. That era has finished.
The Global Jigsaw from the BBC World Service. Listen now by searching for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm Christina Firk. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. This time, it's young women in Gaza who have been telling us the stories of their lives since October last year. I'm one of the producers on the OS team. Since the beginning of the Israel and Hamas war in October last year, I've been following the lives of several people in Gaza. When they were able to, they have been sending us voice messages and text updates or chats, like this one.
I asked myself, who should I cry for first? You lost your loved ones, you lost your friends, your neighbors, your dreams, everything here in Gaza.
That's Sanabel, and we'll hear more from her later. It is now almost 6 months since the October the 7th attacks on Israel by Hamas, which is designated a terrorist organization by many Western countries. The attacks, the deadliest in Israel's history, killed 1,400 people, while 253 others were taken into Gaza as hostages. Israel's bombardment of Gaza that followed has continued since. This has displaced around 80% of the population in the territory, and according to the Hamas-run health ministry, has killed 30,000 Palestinians. So, what we plan to do on this edition is to hear from each of our contributors, one at a time. They will take you through the sequence of events in their lives. And just to explain, their voices might sound like they changed during their messages. That's because they often have to move to different locations, they have a varying quality of connections, and the understandable changes in their emotional state. And suffice to say, some of what they describe you might find distressing. We are going to start with Batul. She's 18 and a poet. She lived in Gaza City, in the north of the Strip, when we first made contact with her on the 11th of October, 3 days after Israel officially declared war. We heard from her first live on our weekday show OS, when it was still possible to have a stable internet connection to Gaza. At the time, she was at her aunt's house in Gaza City, together with her family, because she had to evacuate from her home. Here's an extract from that show.
You can't say that there is a safe place in Gaza because we leave the neighborhood and we came to another place where they also bumped houses in the street. So there's no actually safe place, but my mom and me and my siblings, we feel more safe with other people. It just makes the pressure less. Everyone here says that you have to stay strong, especially that I'm the oldest one in my siblings, so I have to not show my fear. But in the current moments, everyone feels in that way. And every minute, I think that our house is going to be bombed and I will die. Guys, sorry, yeah. I have to leave. They are going to bomb a place near to my house, so I have to leave now.
Batul had to leave the conversation suddenly as she found out there was a warning that the neighborhood was about to be bombed. We heard again from her 2 days later. October the 13th was a Friday, and the day more than a million people were warned to start to move from the northern Gaza further south after the Israeli army had issued an evacuation warning.
When I heard about the evacuation, I went back to my home. I want to die with my whole family in my home. I'm depressed and mentally destroyed. In the last 2 hours, I cried more than any time in my life. Other people are crying and evacuating. No one knows what to do. They all walking in the streets because there is no car to get them to south. Everyone asks the other where they go, and they answer, "We don't know." We still don't know if we are going to stay or leave. The Israeli armies are still bombing everywhere. So if we decided to leave, we are also in danger.
On October 17th, Batul sent another update, where she described how the family was still deciding whether to stay home or evacuate south. The noise in the background is a sound you will hear in several of the messages from all the young women. It is Israeli drones above the Gaza Strip.
There's no internet nor electricity. In the previous days, I and my family had to take the most important decision, which was to evacuate to the south or to stay at home. My grandparents' neighborhood is fully destroyed. I lost two of my friends yesterday, and I had to cut more than half my long hair because I can't wash it. There is no enough amount of water to spend on my hair. Now, I can't be a woman in the way I want. I and my family are sleeping in my parents' room to die together. This is our only wish. I'm not scared anymore. I'm just waiting for my certain death, like others.
After this, I was only able to communicate with her via written messages. She told me that she and her family had managed to move to the south of Gaza, to Rafah. They were living in a tent and were exhausted. She said many of her friends had been killed. She also shared a poem with me that she had written about her experiences. Here's part of it.
I'm going to read you the English version of my poem. I'm roaming through the alleys of the refugee camp, my words only echoing across my ravaged heart. A whistle blasting out someplace, not only outside, but also inside me. I'm a stormy sea. Someone's stolen a cloud from me shale and blazed it over my head. They thought it was me stole it. And so I had to suffer. In the refugee camp like land and destiny, the noise they make when they hug the darkened sky, their shell breathe from the walls. I wrap up in the black blanket from the agency that won't warm either my very blue body or my leather toe. I'm carrying my white card. I stand in line with an endless crowd and get tea bags of flour, lentils, chickpeas, oil, tent-free stuff, sugar, elation, then hysterical weeping. It was my lot to be a refugee in the regions of a homeland I don't know. Take me back home.
The poem is the last time she has sent us a voice note. The last text message I received from her was a fortnight ago, and any of my recent messages to her remain undelivered. I mentioned Rafah a moment ago. It is a city in the south of Gaza and at the border crossing into Egypt. Currently, around 1.5 million Gazans are there, with many who have been displaced having earlier been told that that was a safe area. Before I introduce you to the next person I've been speaking to, let me share some more about the general population of Gaza. It is one of the most densely populated places on Earth, where ordinarily some 2 million people live. And according to the United Nations, they are on the verge of famine. The small strip of land is bordered by Israel to the east and north, the Mediterranean Sea to the west, and Egypt to the south. Children and people under 18 make up nearly half of the population. The UN's children's agency, UNICEF, says that more than 13,000 children have been killed in the ongoing war, and many who survive will see a long-lasting impact on their lives. One of these young people is 16-year-old Sanabel. We were first put in contact with her by her aunt Ola on October the 14th, when Sanabel sent us this message.
This war doesn't look like any wars that's happened before. When people ask me where is my biggest fear, I was always answer living in wars. I'm terrified to lose my family, my home, in addition my dreams and my ambitions. Most of Gazan people died without warning in their houses. A week has passed since the war began, and there are no basic things that we need to continue our lives. We are here in Gaza without electricity, water, or even the internet. My little sister's birthday has come. There are no shops to buy cakes because of the violent explosions.
Being afraid of the explosions became a part of the daily life for Sanabel, as towards the end of October, conditions in Gaza worsened with Israeli airstrikes intensifying and aid agencies warning that hospitals risked running out of fuel. For almost 10 days from October 16th, Sanabel sent us a series of messages.
Last night was the most terrifying at all. In every explosion, I feel that the time has come to eliminate us. Night has come. People are waiting it to sleep and rest. But in Gaza, we are waiting it in order to die because of the annoying sounds of planes that we always hear it. Fire belts, missiles. It looks like a nightmare. There is no light. The electricity has been cut off for 11 days. They want us to die from pain. Please pray for us. I have to be strong and hide my fear so as not to frighten my little sister. In order to relieve myself of the anxiety of this war, I should sit with my family and talk together because it makes me feel better. You can imagine that we stand for more than 3 hours to buy bread, and with difficulty we also buy vegetables and fruits because the crossing is closed and we import them from abroad. The markets will also be closed due to the lack of goods. We don't know how we will live. I have collapsed. I was afraid of the night, but now I'm afraid of the night and the day. I can't believe that I'm still alive.
Christina, I can't do anything. I can't do anything, just the word to stop the war. We are really fed up. I can't do anything, just pray for us.
Maybe it's the turn to be also to die.
Do something for us, please. I can't. Maybe I'm going to lose my dream, my families. I can't.
By the way, there are a lot of people under the rubble of their houses. No one can help them.
I am in my home. I can't go out of my home because the missiles bomb everywhere.
I then did not hear from Sanabel for 5 months, until March the 18th, where she told me she was still in Gaza City, but had not had any access to the internet until this point. She also shared the sad news with me that her aunt Ola, who was the one that put us in contact with her in the first place, was killed in an airstrike. Having managed to get a better internet connection, she shared a series of voice messages with me.
I missed my life before 7th October. My relatives were with me, but now? Please. Like, how can I understand what happened to you in Gaza? I lost 6 of my father's relatives and 4 of my mother's relatives. I asked myself, who should I cry for first? You lost your loved ones, you lost your friends, your neighbors, your dreams, everything here in Gaza. These days are the hardest at all. The silence of this world makes us feel like they let us down. Like, oh my goodness. Please pray for us. Like, the only solution was just like to die and with your family. Maybe it's the only solution. It is. To die and give up to death.
I'm Christina Völk, and you're listening to BBC OS Conversations, messages from Gaza, from the BBC World Service.
Water used as a weapon of war.
In none of these villages there was any piped clean water for people.
A nation in the grip of criminal gangs.
How bad does it have to get before the international community reacts?
A country showing signs of fracture.
Right now with Sudan, things are really quite dark. The nation is divided. The mistrust runs so deep.
The Global Jigsaw from the BBC World Service is back for a new series. Listen now by searching for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hallo, hier sind Julia und Chris vom Podcast Drinnies. Wir machen nicht nur einen Comedy-Podcast, sondern gehen auch leidenschaftlich gerne nicht zu Stoßzeiten in den Supermarkt. Ehrlich gesagt bleibe ich am liebsten ganz zu Hause und ziehe nur eine Hose an, wenn es klingelt. Wenn es euch auch so geht, dann ist HelloFresh genau das Richtige für euch. Der Kochbox-Lieferservice bringt euch frische, abwechslungsreiche Gerichte direkt vor die Haustür, die ihr im Handumdrehen selbst zubereiten könnt.
Und mit dem Code LECKER24 könnt ihr jetzt richtig sparen. In Deutschland bis zu 120 Euro, in Österreich bis zu 130 Euro und in der Schweiz bis zu 140 Franken. Also Code LECKER24 eingeben und sparen.
PS, der panierte Portobello-Pilz mit Sweet Chili Ketchup ist sehr gut.
Leute, es wird unangenehm, denn ich muss euch einfach fragen, habt ihr euch eigentlich schon mal um eure Versicherung gekümmert? Hier ist übrigens Tara vom Podcast Tara sagt was und ich sage euch, es wird allerhöchste Zeit, Ordnung in euer Versicherungschaos zu bringen und dabei kann euch die App Clark helfen. Da arbeiten ganz viele Expertinnen, die das hauptberuflich machen, man glaubt es kaum. Und mit meinem Code TARA60, alles groß und zusammengeschrieben, könnt ihr euch sogar einen Shopping-Gutschein sichern, 60 Euro, bei zum Beispiel Amazon oder Douglas einlösbar, mit dem Code TARA60.
Another young woman that I am in contact with is Asil. She's 26 and a freelance journalist. She started sending us messages from October the 11th, while she was still at her home in the area Tel Al-Hawa, which is part of Gaza City. Here are two messages she sent us shortly after the war started.
Hello, I am Asil Musa. I'm recording this voicemail while I am under bombardment around my home. Since the early hours of Saturday, Israel declared the situation a state of war. Since then, it has been bombing entire neighborhoods in Gaza. These buildings have collapsed on the residents while they were sleeping at night. I have nowhere to go. There are no shelters in Gaza and there is no safe place. It's now the 6th day of Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. I remain at my home feeling helpless as Israel has cut off electricity, internet and water from the Strip. We have only 4 hours of electricity a day. And yesterday, I went through a very harrowing experience as a tower next to my home in Tel Al-Hawa was targeted. Neighbors were rushing down the stairs. Children were screaming, and glass was shattering over the heads of residents. At the same time, my brother, who lives outside Gaza, was calling to check on us. I was trembling with fear as I told him that we had to evacuate our home. We quickly grabbed our evacuation bags, which contained only our passport, IDs, and some essential items, and descended to the base of the tower in which we live. I will never forget the situation for the rest of my life.
Asil and her family then decided to leave her house and neighborhood for good and moved to the Al-Mahasi refugee camp in the center of the Gaza Strip. During October and November, she sent us these voice notes covering her journey and her time in the camp. Asil needed to keep her messages short due to the limited internet and connection.
I'm recording this while I'm evacuating my home from the west of the Gaza Strip in Tal el-Hawa neighborhood to Al-Maghazi refugee camp. We left our homes having nothing. All I grabbed with me is just a bag with my passport and my ID. Although we escaped from our home, still I don't feel safe. Everything is targeted in the Gaza Strip. No place is safe. In a brief, I can say that we escaped from death to death. The first thing that came to my mind that we may be targeted while we are in the car. Me, my parents, my sisters, and my brothers pray for me to not evacuate from Al-Maghazi refugee camp. I cannot handle it anymore to escape from another home to another home, and maybe to schools and maybe to the streets. It's now the 10th day of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. I'm now in my relative's home. I'm still in the Al-Maghazi refugee camp. The situation is still catastrophic. I really can't bear this pain anymore.
For 40 days, the Gaza Strip has endured bombardments. The healthcare system already collapsed as the hospitals are run out of fuel and a lot of hospitals stopped working. I'm still hearing bombardments all the time, artillery shelling in the night. We wake up every morning just trying to check on our relatives and beloved ones. After that, we try to think of what we will eat and what we can cook as the shops run out of the whole goods. We barely have healthy water, and even the undrinkable water is also very limited. In the safe area, as Israel claimed, I lost 9 people from my family. 7 of them are children. Israel just bombed the house. We in Gaza witnessed the most challenging and dire days in our lives.
Hello, Christina. The situation in the Gaza Strip during the temporary ceasefire is still dire. So many people are still under the rubble, and we cannot pull them out as the machinery in Gaza are very old. I'm still suffering. Actually, I'm now in the refuge house in Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the middle of the Gaza Strip. I just saw some photos and videos for the apartment we used to live in Tal el-Hawa. And the videos were like very heartbreaking, actually seeing the home where I spent my childhood, my entire life, and is damaged is something that is indescribable.
Although Asil did not want to move again, her journey continued. She eventually had to make her way to Rafah in the south. She sent me these messages in January and February.
My family and I have been displaced in Rafah city in the south of the Gaza Strip for 5 days now. This is the second time during the recent Israeli aggression on Gaza. Previously, we were displaced for 78 days in Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the middle of the Gaza Strip. The situation in Gaza is deeply saddening, and the Palestinian people in Gaza are facing immense challenges. People here are suffering and acquiring basic necessities. Food and essential materials are in severe shortage. The city of Rafah now hosts over 1 million displaced people, with many residing in tents, on the streets, and in underwater schools. The displaced people are enduring harsh conditions, including extreme cold, rain, and the risk of epidemics.
Hi, Christina. This is Asil Musa again.
Actually, the Israeli bombing in Gaza last night was insane. It was like non-stop airstrikes and artillery fire. We were all terrified. You know that over 1.3 million Palestinians are now displaced in Rafah. There's nowhere to go to. Actually, there's nowhere safe in Gaza anymore.
I'm so sorry. I cannot describe details. The whole world just saw the reality. The whole world listened to the suffering of the Palestinian people in Gaza. And now I'm so, so sorry. I cannot.
Since February 19th, I have not received a voice message from Asil. However, over the recent weeks, she has sent me text messages with two simple words: still alive. Some Gazans, those who can afford it, have tried to leave Gaza, crossing the border at Rafah to Egypt. Leanne, who is 35, chose to take this route with her two daughters, Sama and Ilya, who are 12 and 7 years old. She used to work at the American International School. When the war started, her husband was outside Gaza for work, so she traveled alone with her two daughters. She sent us this message on the 9th of November, after she left her home in Gaza City.
Hello, my name is Leanne Bakir. I was born, raised, and lived in Gaza for my whole life. I started writing these words. The words were pouring with my tears. I will be reading them to you. The situation is that we may die at any moment, living without running water, electricity, fuel, bread, forced to flee my house, my home, living as a refugee in my own country. I can't be joined with my husband who traveled a few days before war. I even can't reach my family, my mother, father, sisters, and grandma for more than a month now, even though they live in the same city. But I can't leave. I can't walk on the street. It's not safe. Even though they told us to head south, as it is safe there, it is not safe. There is ongoing shelling and bombing. Now we became experts to recognize the weapon firing on us, a tank, a warship, or a warcraft. My kids were cut off education for more than a month now. I can get them good food or fresh water. Even their school was bombed. If someone shuts a door or sneezes, they would panic and yell. They would think it's a bomb hitting us. The smell of death is all around us. I'm holding my kids, wishing to die all together, so no one would be left behind to grieve the other. I know that I have to be strong for my kids, but I'm not that strong. No one is. My heart is shattered. Gazans are not heroes. They are not superheroes. They are not made of rock. We bleed. We cry. We get scared. We love. We get loved. We love our children the way all mothers around the world do. We love to live, to read, to shop, to learn, to work, to travel, to succeed. We are just normal people. Why do we have to endure all this pain? How much one's heart can take? How much cruelty can witness? How many wars we can survive? How many times we have to rebuild? Why does everyone assume that we have no feelings, no value, that we must simply die in silence? Why we can't say no? How much we have to lose? How many times we have to be refugees again? Why can't our kids grow older? Why do we have to die while we're alive?
11 days later, Leanne sent her last update before they crossed into Egypt.
Hello, this is me again, Leanne Becker, speaking after 40 days living under the Israeli attack. Gaza's left alone to suffer, to bleed, to pain, to shudder, to scream. Life in Gaza has stopped ever since. We began to forget how normal life is. All days now are the same. October have passed, November has come. Nothing has changed. We don't know what day of the week it is, or what is the date. Everyone the poor and the rich are looking for a crumb of bread, for a drop of water, for a source of power to charge their phone. In Gaza, if you lose your house that has all your memories, all your loved belongings, all your warmth, all the corners that you that make you feel safe and be yourself, we can't grieve that. We are shy to grieve it, because we know there is another one who lost a child, and another who lost a mother, and another whose whole family was wiped off the civil record. It is no time to break down, not yet. We don't have the luxury for breaking down. We need to stay strong, even though the word strong seems overrated. But when I finally get to cry, I will cry forever.
We got in touch with her and her two daughters when they arrived in Cairo. They explained how they were safe, but at this point had still to be reunited with their husband and father.
Every time in the morning when I wake up, I remember that I'm here in Cairo. I'm safe and sound. My daughters are still safe and sound. I thank God for that. And then I think, how did my family wake up today? I grab my phone and go over the news. If we have connection to Gaza, I try to call when my mom feels good about one of her daughters is being safe. She thinks that at least one of them can survive now. At least if all we all die, one of us can stay alive. So me feeling that she has that feeling is very hard.
My friend Lydia, her house got bombed.
We talk about like who of our friends, like they're still in Gaza and whose house got bombed and stuff like that. But sometimes when I hear the airplanes, I think it's the Israeli airplanes because like I got so used to it. I get scared.
Me too. When I hear a loud noise or an airplane moving, it always comes first to my mind that it's a war plan and that I have to take shelter at the moment. I think our bodies are still in the state of defense or the state of survival instinct.
Despite the physical and emotional toll of the war, it is important to stress that all the women we are in touch with wanted us to share their stories with the rest of the world so that they are not forgotten. And we will try and keep in touch to make sure they are all okay. Our thoughts are with them and their families, and also with those in Israel who are grieving for their loved ones and others who are still anxiously waiting for news on the hostages that are held in the Gaza Strip. We plan to hear those voices from Israel on a later edition. The young Gazan women, Batul, Sanabel, Asil and Leanne, thank you for sharing your stories. I'm Christina Ferg, and you've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
The world is facing a shortage of tradespeople. The metaverse can help solve that problem. With a virtual reality training platform developed by ForgeFX, aspiring welders can practice over and over. As a result, students learn the specialized skills they need to begin and advance welding careers. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
Ob zum Meditieren, Entspannen oder Einschlafen, der neue Podcast Weltwach Klangreise geleitet dich in einem einzigartigen Hörerlebnis rund um den Globus. Begleitet von echten Aufnahmen von vor Ort, bereist du in deiner Fantasie ganze Kontinente, erlebst Klang für Klang ihre vielfältige Flora und Fauna und hörst entspannende Geschichten, die dir erlauben, dich inmitten dieser Umgebungen zu wähnen. Weltwach Klangreise, jetzt abonnieren.